In all things, there exists a point of balance, a line, a fine line, that if crossed, results in the sudden and expedient loss of our self-determination and self-determinism, and it makes us subservient to the fickle whims of social, political, and physical gravity. We are thrown into the air, as it were, and the landing is rarely ever pleasant. The U.S. Constitution and the civil liberties it outlines is itself one of these historic points of balance. Its original purpose was to temper the most epic of grappling matches ever ignited between the relentless constructs of government and the individual freedoms of the common man. The ultimate problem inherent in this struggle is one of consistency, vigilance, and labor. Good evening, and welcome to what I hope will be a very special hour of life, liberty, and all that jazz. I'm your commentator for the next hour, Jeffrey Bennett. You're listening to this program live on this 16th day of December 2010. I say that I hope this is going to be a somewhat special broadcast this evening. We're going to forgo the usual economic commentary. No market reports tonight, no spot golds and silver, what the stock market did. That kind of information is available almost everywhere on the internet. But tonight, we're going to be participating in a little exercise, a little physical exercise, and most importantly, a bit of mental exercise, as it were. Something we like to call constitutional judo. For that, my friends, is what it is. We are enmeshed in a battle of a type that I don't think many of us ever expected we would witness. I certainly did not. Oh, I knew that in time something would get absolutely askew and haywire in this nation, but never in my wildest imagination did I believe we would reach the point that we have today. Consider this, that while the concept of the Democratic Republic and the Constitution was meant to remove suffocating class warfare from our political life and free us from the numerous dangers of elitism, invariably, those men who thirst for power over others find a way to insinuate themselves into any system, regardless of checks or balances, especially when the populace does not fulfill its necessary role as watchdog and tireless sentinel. And that, my friends, is amongst the reasons we have the problems in this nation we have today. Because the populace does not fulfill its necessary and required duty as a watchdog and a tireless sentinel. Oh, we go cast our votes every couple of years and think that that's going to make a lot of difference. We, honest to God, think that the Tea Party revolution is going to make a difference. I've got news for you. It will not. God forbid that Rand Paul moved into the place his daddy's renting in D.C. So what? Two Pauls in Congress don't make a right. You see, many Americans often assume that the people derive their power from the Constitution. But the reality, my friends, is actually the reverse of that. The Constitution, in fact, derives its power from the people. Our duty, which most seem to have forgotten, has always been to protect the rights and liberties inscribed on those pages of parchment. Not just to know those rights or recite them, but to implement and defend them in our day-to-day existence. Without the constant nurturing cultural pulse of sound minds and courageous hearts, the Constitution dies. And yet there are many in our society, instead of taking on the responsibility of preserving their freedoms, have instead handed it over to the trappings of government. Now, the fatal error here is quite obvious. the corporatized and over-centralized political landscape of America's government today does not hold the same values as the people it is determined to lord over. Oh, we've witnessed the parasitic possession of our system, know it to be corrupt, and yet still seem to expect this bureaucratic monstrosity to cradle our liberties in good faith. Government, my friends, is merely a tool, a mechanical apparatus, as it were, that could be used to either preserve freedom or, in fact, annihilate it. Its use depends upon those men who wield it, and the men who wield our government today certainly do not have the expansion of freedom in mind. What we will attempt to do during the course of this hour is examine the many points, not all, but many of the points of contention, or so-called balancing points, that are brewing as our exceedingly globalist-leaning political leadership overstep their bounds on a day-to-day basis. Any one of these points that we'll share with you, if allowed to falter by Americans, could throw the whole of our heritage into disarray, or has it already happened? If you have been living at the center of the earth for the past decade, or playing online games until daybreak, battling for dominion of Castle Grayskull, or just shacking up with Rip Van Winkle for the last 40 years, then you may have missed out on the numerous attempts by our government under both major parties to erode our freedoms, one single precious layer at a time. Some of these attempts have so far fallen flat. Others have been frighteningly successful. I can't even speak today. I share with you a sample of some of the more recent actions and legislation designed specifically to swindle away your rights, if not the shirt off your back. And I suppose if they get the shirt, they'll go for the pants, the skirt, the dresses, and pretty soon we're going to be one big buck-naked nation. How many years ago was the Patriot Act introduced? So we've had Patriot Act 1 and 2. It is what we call the chameleon legislation, designed to be open to interpretation, not by you and I, but by officials, and to be modified for whatever purpose they happen to deem fit at the moment. And so in this past decade, ultimately, both Patriot Acts opened a terrible gateway to a world where any freedom became expendable, especially if it meant stopping terrorists or evildoers. Of course, the manner in which terrorism is defined by proponents of the Patriot Act is wildly general. I mean, most of us know it. Any one of us could be defined as a terrorist, and any threat could be construed as a matter of national security. The true goal of this legislation was never meant to protect the public, but to untie the hands of the establishment while implementing further destructive actions. As well, of course, as to plant the fog of doubt into the minds of mindless Americans as to the continued validity of the Constitution itself. Here's one we should be quite concerned about. The Enemy Belligerents Act, which was a perfect example of how the leadership cast of the CASTE, of the demagogues and the Republic rats who are neocons, not true conservatives, how they work in tandem to institute globalist policy. But in this case, the act was introduced by the dastardly duo of John McCain and Joe Lieberman. To put it simply, that legislation, this Enemy Belligerents Act, if it is fully imposed, would allow the government to label any person they choose, even an American citizen, as an enemy combatant. That means I, speaking in the manner that I am tonight and many other nights, could be certainly considered an enemy combatant. It means you could be labeled an enemy combatant just because you listen to this subversive broadcast. Oh, that's what they call it. All of this means you could be arrested without being officially charged. You could be imprisoned without trial or legal counsel. And it could all be done for an unspecified length of time. And no one, not even your family, would be told where you were. Why don't they just rename it the Shanghai Act? Because it basically legalizes government piracy. And the only problem, my friend, the only problem is that this Shanghai is less likely to end with tropical island adventure and more likely to end with you being tossed into a dark, stinky hellhole in the middle of another Abu Ghraib-ass prison surrounded by blackwater mongoloids with a penchant for naked man dog piles. Oh, yes, once again, this is the kind of poison your government thinks up on a regular basis. You doubt me? Oh, we have marvelous links to go along with this. How about Mr. X, Elizabeth Taylor? John Warner. The John Warner Defense Authorization Act. This was a bill passed by Junior Bush in 2007 with very little media coverage, which allowed the federal government at the direction of the president to subvert posse comitatus and use the military within the borders of the United States as a police force without any consent from state governments. Also would give the office of the presidency unprecedented powers over the National Guard. Oh, yeah, just go ahead and add any real or engineered national disaster, and what you get is a perfect recipe for Hurricane Katrina deluxe. Martial law, here we come. The establishment of NORTHCOM. NORTHCOM was actually a post that I was stationed on in Germany back in the 1960s. NORTHCOM is short for United States Northern Command. Is, at bottom, the teeth behind legislation like Warner's Defense Act. You see, if martial law would be declared in the United States, it would be NORTHCOM and its assigned military units that would stand at the forefront. NORTHCOM's stated mission would be to defend the homeland, supposedly against terrorism, and yet much of NORTHCOM's focus in annual exercises like Vigilant Shield has been to prepare for civil unrest and continuity of government. Continuity of them. Don't be concerned about the continuity of human beings on the street, but only continuity of our enemy. Them. Government. Meaning that these NORTHCOM individuals train under the assumption that you are the enemy. The first person posted to command NORTHCOM was General Ralph Eberhardt, the same man who was in charge of NORAD on 9/11. I guess apparently if you ignore available intelligence and fail completely in your assigned duties, you get a promotion in the upper echelons of the military today. Unless I missed something, and he didn't fail. Oh, well, what's the difference? PDD 51. Presidential Directive 51. Now, this has nothing to do with Area 51. That's a different story. Government likes to throw around a lot of numbers, don't they? PDD 51 was a presidential action shrouded in almost complete secrecy and general cloak and dagger spookiness. When ignorant yuppies accuse the liberty movement of paranoia, we tend to point out PDD 51 and ask them if they are at least intelligent enough to be concerned. Oh, that was another order initiated by Junior Bush. continued by Uncle Remus, sometimes known as the Kingfish or Barack Obama. PDD 51 was designed to give the president virtual dictatorial powers during a state of national emergency. Who, of course, I might ask, has the right to declare what that national emergency might be? PDD 51 dissolves all states' rights and places the entire country under the purview of NORTHCOM and Homeland Security. The guise of continuity of government is used as a rationale. PDD 51 also allows the president to declare a state of emergency for almost any reason. Of course, members of Congress and even some members of Homeland Security who have requested to read the entire directive were denied. That bill is apparently so disturbing that Obama does not even want those with security clearance to view the full document. Oh, I'm sure there's some gray area that can be exploited where classified materials are concerned, as far as I can tell from our research. Obama's withholding of information on a directive such as PDD 51 from Congress would be wholly illegal. But then Obama seems to have withheld an awful lot of information for one reason or another, which may not be illegal, but it's certainly questionable. It might even be immoral. Of course, the one I like is FISA. The Feasibility, or Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Well, there's that term, you know, government intelligence, military intelligence, foreign intelligence. You can't mix those. They're all oxymorons. But FISA was supported by both Bush and Obama. Of course, the word foreign is highly misleading. FISA allows telecom companies, telephone companies, to supply the personal data and communications of anyone, including Americans, to the government without threat of civil retribution. What is civil retribution? In simple terms, it is a lawsuit. Now, under constitutional law, any invasion of privacy by government authorities must first be approved through an individualized warrant. The person or premises to be monitored must be specified. The reason behind the surveillance must be clearly explained. But FISA does away with all of those inconveniences. FISA does away with all of those protections to your privacy. It gives free rein to government to spy on whoever they choose, meaning you and I, without any oversight whatsoever. FISA even allows for mass surveillance or data collation on entire subsections of the populace. Now, what we find most interesting about FISA is the way in which it brazenly breaks the barrier between government and corporate power. You see, we all know about the revolving door in D.C., but in the past, the idea of the barrier was at least somewhat maintained for appearances, if nothing else. The trick to FISA is that technically it is the telephone companies that are doing the actual surveillance, not government. Now, I'm sure that it's the argument that will be used by the feds if FISA is ever taken to the Supreme Court under the Fourth Amendment. But the reality is that the telecoms and the government are, you know, one and the same. And to treat them as two separate legal entities is to blind oneself to the facts. Now, Benito Mussolini's definition of fascism, which was the melding of government and corporate infrastructure into a single entity with a single purpose, certainly seems to apply to the United States today. You know, I think about this commentary about the government and the telecoms being one and the same. There was a film done back in the 1960s called The President's Analyst with James Coburn. And that was the premise of it. That the telephone company, in fact, had become Big Brother. If you've never seen it, rent it, buy a copy. I don't care if you get a videotape or a DVD, if it's out there. It is an amazing film. Oh, yes, it's got a lot of black humor in it. Coburn is the president's analyst. He finally gets so much in his head, he says, I got to get out of here. I can't stand that. And spies from all over the world are trying to get him so they can get all the information out of this analyst's head from everything that the president of the United States has spewed upon him. And he and a Russian spy and some other guy basically wind up uncovering the truth as to who's really running the country. The telephone company. So amongst some of the other problems we face, some of the other issues that could bring this nation to its knees for the final time, Big Brother's technotronic super-villainesque surveillance grid. Sounds like some kind of a psychedelic thing, doesn't it? Have you ever felt like you were being watched? Well, according to Homeland Security, you better get used to it. CCTV cameras have doubled in most U.S. cities over the past several years. New York has tripled theirs in just the past 6 months. But I don't suspect we got an awful lot of people in New York City listening to this program. Those people are off in their own little world. They got Bloomberg and his girlfriend to deal with. TSA has been given invincible IRS-like goon squad status. They now fondle us and X-ray our airport travelers at will, storing biometric data without consent and generally treating people worse than cattle. You say you don't care because you don't fly? Don't worry. Naked body scanners are coming to bus and train stations near you. Hell, if we don't put a stop to this horror soon, the TSA may roll scanners out on street corners. I think we could really put a world of hurt in the Chinese economy if we all just stopped buying clothes. Forget book burnings. Let's go burn our clothes and run around buck naked. Let it all hang out, baby. You know, a friend of mine was recently on a trip to Boston. Went to see the USS Constitution. Oldest commissioned American war vessel still afloat. He tells us that his excitement was soon smothered when he realized that visitors had to pass through metal detectors and security just to see the ship. Now, I'm sure the government's merely trying to prevent Al-Qaeda from sneaking on board with box cutters and hijacking the ship and sailing into the Sears Tower, causing the building to implode at a near freefall speed. Well, the reason Jerry was disenchanted with the experience was because he knew the metal detectors and security served next to no purpose whatsoever, except to condition people into accepting that this was the norm. Everywhere you go, the Department of Homeland Security is standing by, watching over you. Of course, the next thing would be pretty easy. Track national ID cards. They were attempted a few years ago with little success under the so-called Real ID Act. State compliance for the Real ID was postponed until May 2011. Folks, that's only but 5 months away. Right around the corner. Every cozy little corner. We'll see if the states cave in or stand their ground. By the way, speaking about states standing their ground, federal judge Susan Bolton has now ruled in favor of Arizona's SB 1070, 6 out of 8 points. There have been 8 lawsuits to put a complete block on Arizona's SB 1070. That's the one that makes it illegal to be an illegal in the state of Arizona. She has thrown six of those cases completely out of court as being invalid. She knew she had to take her time, even though she really had no legal position to be ruling. You think the states are going to cave in? Most of them will. They're gutless. Because the government will dangle the carrot, dangle the purse strings in front of them. I mean, come on. No surveillance society will be complete without citizen spies. I remember after the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security tried to enlist truck drivers across the country to be their spies. Trucker Bob and Trucker Bill won't have a damn thing to do with any of that stuff. Homeland Security is establishing its new If You See Something, Say Something campaign. Oh, you can see all that about your local Walmart. Yes, sirree, Bob. Imagine the ghoulish face of cave troll Janet Napolitano leering down at aisle 5 as you attempt to save a buck on frozen buffalo wings. She slobbers rhetoric about how you were surrounded by terrorists while you try to find that economy-sized box of Count Chocula. Sorry, he's in D.C. with the bitch. Oh, wouldn't we all just feel a bit safer? And every time we turn around, we seem to have another bailout bond. Oh, yeah, I find that a lot of people like to blame our current economic doomfest on one political party or another, stumbling about in the dark in a sad attempt to trace the roots of the credit and mortgage collapse all the way back to Obama or Bush 2 or Clinton or Bush 1. How about we take it all the way back to Woody Wilson? Yeah, that's right. The Federal Reserve did come about during his reign, didn't it? And yet everybody's desperate to play cheerleader for their own damn team. Rah, 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 sis, boom, bah. Most people don't realize that both of these teams are fake, and almost every president since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913 is to blame for the selling out of the American people to global banks. Oh, let us not forget, my friends, both Obama and Baby Bush supported bailout legislation, which is now widely considered to be an abject failure.
But look, we were able to revive General Motors. AIG is doing things right. They're paying us back.
Yeah? Is that going to lower my taxes? You stole from me to give to them, but what are you going to give back to me? The majority of Americans, according to most polls, oppose these bailout bills. In all forms and variations, and yet each and every one was passed. What do the bailouts have to do with the loss of constitutional rights, you ask? Because when the entirety of your country's financial future is poured into the coffers of international banking elites and your currency is subsequently debased, if not destroyed, leaving you with nothing but debt and supranational centralization, it is a certainty that a total loss of your rights will soon follow. Stay with us. We'll be back after this single break during this special one-hour program.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Don't answer it.
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Welcome back, my friends, to a special non-financial Thursday. We're covering no economic issues today. One of the things that we are talking about, however, deals with, I guess in a major respect, exactly how we as a nation are losing everything. Why do I share all of this with you? I mean, these are a wide range of attempts being promulgated by our own beloved federal government. No differentiation of parties, because they're all the same. But look, folks, they're Republican, Democrat, doesn't make any difference. They're having one big fat party. We're paying for it. We don't even get hats and whistles and bells or anything else. We don't get to participate in the party. We are the hors d'oeuvres. We are the main course. And we are the dessert. Jeez, don't tell that to Barney Frank. Some of the more recent things that many of us have become aware of. S-510. The FDA's Food Safety Modernization Act. Just another thing they're cramming up our backsides. Just another bill written in such a way as to make it wide open for interpretation by the authorities. First of all, the FDA has never been synonymous with safety, considering that half the products they approve end up causing cancer or shrinking your testicles. Oh, they'd approve rat urine for mass consumption if a company like Monsanto wanted to market it. The FDA's true role has been to let major corporations violate safety regulations unobstructed, while ruthlessly bringing the hammer down on smaller businesses. And now the FDA has set its aim upon not just small farms, but your personal victory garden, as it were. This bill gives the FDA far-reaching powers over what it terms food production facilities, which are defined as any farm, ranch, orchard, vineyard, aquaculture facility, or confined animal feeding operation. but also places all food production under the control of Homeland Security in the event of a national emergency. There's that poorly defined phrase once again. We've heard that some organic growers and ranchers shrug off the bill. They believe the FDA would never take advantage of the broad interpretation and bring pressure on private gardens or food trade. Talk to my friend Ron Ewart at Narlo about that. Go, look it up. Narlo.org, N-A-R-L-O.org. Get a hold of Ron. Take a look at his website. Drop him a note. Tell him I sent you over there. This kind of naivete, my friends, is always astonishing to me as well as many of you. When has a society ever opened a door to power that its government has not taken quick advantage of? You crack the door just a little bit and let that government man get his foot in the door, and it's all over Katie bar the door. I mean, the FDA has already begun harassing the Amish, of all people, for private farm trade, and that's even before S-510. My good friend Bill O'Brien up in Pennsylvania deals with the Amish all the time. And the stories he's been telling me about how they've been getting harassed are unfathomable. We may see about bringing Bill up on the air with us next week. The Amish. These are non-commercial farms, and yet the FDA believes it has the authority to dictate their food production activities. If the government's willing to set its laser-guided sights on a pacifist group that still rides around in horse and buggy, then they'll definitely have no qualms going after you and I. You know, most people enjoy the so-called advantages of freedom and are naturally conservative towards government, whether they realize it or not, because of the rather unsavory past actions of the neocons, that's globalists. I also sometimes, because of the number of people in our government who have dual citizenship, I for many years referred to neocons as just a new description for the term new Jews. And so the word conservative has been sullied. It's now associated with corporatism and big government. And yet real conservatism has always been quite revolutionary. You see, true conservatives believe in the principle of limited government and individualism above collectivism. Another one of those marvelous communist words, collectivism. All of this means that they usually find themselves the target of establishment fury. True conservatives are almost always in rebellion against the system because the system is almost always operated by those who are anti-freedom. Show me, my friends, a self-proclaimed conservative who supports proliferation of government with a smile, and I'll show you I guess I better be polite while we're on the air. I will show you a very confused man. You know, the label conservative probably should really be interchangeable with constitutionalist. And once this is understood, anti-constitutional arguments should be viewed without the blurred distractions of this false left-right paradigm garbage. We begin to understand that the conflict is not between Democrat and Republic, liberal or conservative, or Christian or Jew, or black against white, or any other damn thing. Because all of these terms have been warped and their meaning has been eroded. The conflict we face is instead between individualists or constitutionalists and collectivists or globalists. We've all heard the gamut of anti-constitutional arguments in the past, but almost always through the typical left-right filter. Let us set that filter aside for a few minutes and consider a few of them once again, more objectively. Argument number one.
The Constitution's an outdated document. It's no longer practical for the modern world.
We've all heard this argument from both sides of the aisle many, many, many times, indicating that left versus right is all, you call it fantasy, I call it BS. Does a good idea, does a great idea ever become outdated? What about the simplicity of inborn instincts? Can the desire for freedom ever be impractical? The suggestion that the Constitution is too old is ludicrous for many reasons. And if for no other reason, I want you to go later on to federalobserver.com. I want you to read Neil Ross's latest column. It's the top one or two articles on the Federal Observer right now, where he's taking Supreme Court Justice Breyer to task for a massive misinterpretation of the Second Amendment of the Constitution. The Second Amendment to the Bill of Rights, the right to keep and bear arms. So when people say the Constitution is too old, it really is ludicrous. First, the idea of an independent republic is painfully new compared to the long wash or hogwash of human empires filled with vast stretches of feudalism and tyranny. Globalism is often touted as the next step in the cultural evolution of man. But it's really a giant leap backwards compared to constitutionalism, representing yet another old centralist autocracy marketed in a somewhat more modern way. A global feudal state is still a feudal state, no matter how you look at it. Secondly, the guidelines of the Constitution are built upon social necessities that have never and will never disappear. The right to speak openly one's opinions or observations without fear of government reprisal is not a right that we will ever find ourselves too modern to appreciate. The right to bear arms and defend oneself will always be essential to a culture that wishes to prevent despotism in its various forms. I'll take a rock, a spear, a rake, a shovel, or a gun. It doesn't matter. I will do what's necessary to defend myself and my family. The right to privacy from all people, including the government, will never be programmed out of the public. Not entirely, not so long as thorns in their side like me continue to walk the face of this earth. And even once I'm dead and gone, somebody somewhere will have heard the word freedom once and become curious as to what its meaning was and find out that it was a pretty damn decent thing. You see, my friends, every man, or if you wish to get politically correct, every man, woman, and child has an innate need to live without being examined and judged as though he or she were under constant suspicion. Every aspect of the Constitution is as much a part of us in our own eyes and ears. These things never lose their usefulness, no matter what era we live in. And finally, I have yet to see a political dynamic that is more sincere and honorable than the United States Constitution. I have never seen nor read of a social concept presented as an alternative to the Constitution that does not have an ulterior motive attached. You know, if someone, anyone, can present a new system that improves upon the Constitution while retaining the liberties described in the Constitution, frankly, I'd love to see it. Hey, I'm open. I hear an awful lot of criticism of the Constitution by neocons, but I've never seen any of them present a workable replacement that the public would respect or willingly accept. Argument number two. Some rights must be given up for the greater good. I'll tell you a little secret, folks. There ain't no greater good unless you're talking about personal conscience. If your version of the greater good demands that you supplant your personal conscience, then it is not greater, and it damn sure ain't good. Safety is usually the catalyzing issue that leads to relinquished liberties, but safety itself is an illusion. No government can promise you true safety. Life is dangerous and filled with the unexpected. So, big deal. They're now thinking of sending the underwear bomber up for life because he was unsuccessful in blowing his nuts off on an airplane coming into this country last year. But on the other hand, over here, they found a new suppository. That's right, little bombs in a suppository form that they cram up their posteriors when they get on the plane. So where's the safety? Where's the security? Get over it. Stop projecting your fears upon the rest of us. Because if somebody really feels that they are in imminent danger of a terrorist attack, then they should build a concrete bunker for themselves and stay in it, instead of trying to impose a collective bunker made out of unconstitutional laws and government surveillance all around us. Jesus God, the biggest terrorists we have in this nation today, their names aren't necessarily Ahmed or Al-Qaeda or Zimbabwe bin Laden or anything else. They're real common names, and most of them serve in government in Washington, D.C. And so the question I pose to you ultimately, what is the greater good in these situations? Is it an unaccountable globalist nanny state and the dissolution of all individual and national sovereignty for the sake of a few people's delusions of security? Well, maybe I'm reckless, folks, but I ain't buying that brand of BS. Argument number three. I've always loved this one. This fits into the John Lennon mentality. I don't know, Mr. Producer, we still got Lennon's song around, Imagine? Maybe we ought to close the program out with it tonight. It certainly fits the topic. If you can find it, Dan, pull it up for us, would you? We'll close out with it tonight. Thanks, brother. Argument number three, national sovereignty must be removed if we are to achieve world peace. World peace sounds real nice, I admit it, but anybody who thinks removing constitutional boundaries and bowing to globalism is the cure for war is smoking something laced with a serious amount of something. Matter of fact, I'm going to call Brother Ray and tell him to bring me some wacky weed. I think it's time I get bombed and not worry about it. Or is that bonged? Do you realize that almost every single war of the past century alone has been funded, facilitated, or outright ignited by the same types of global elitists who now demand that we centralize world economic and political power into their hands so they can end war? Now, they've certainly been funded, oy vey. Look, folks, none of this is irony. All of this is very well thought out. It's Hegelian gaming, a sort of anti-karma that rewards evil and punishes the respectable. Well, we've all been led to believe that peace requires some kind of Faustian trade, freedom for harmony, but forget that stuff. You see, legitimate freedom is a harbinger of peace. Nothing, not even the promise of harmony, is worth trading it away. But what about argument number four? Come on, Bennett. The government could never undo constitutional liberties because we just vote them out. Oh, come on. That argument shows a serious lack of insight into how government actually functions. Most of the anti-constitutional legislation described in this program was supported by both the major parties. You don't vote nothing out. Oh, so big deal. You vote a bunch of demagogues out, but they just get replaced by a bunch of Republic rats. It would be logical to then consider that voting out one party and replacing them with the other makes little difference as to the policies this government pursues. And I don't just mean this Obama government. Unless you're voting for third party or liberty-based candidates, your stop at the ballot box was a big waste of time. And personally, in less than a month, we'll know. Because an awful lot of these third party or so-called liberty-based candidates, well, they're getting laced with a little something right about now. I'm going to tell you, the folks who write in Mickey Mouse have more sense than most of the voting public. The people who write in Monty Brewster have more sense than most of the voting public. The point? Elections change nothing on a federal level. The argument is also sometimes reversed by nihilists who claim that the American public is to blame for government corruption because they voted for said politicians in the first place. Once again, my friends, how the public votes has little or no bearing on most major elections because they've not been given a real choice. They're offered frick and frack. I don't know, I get more excitement when deciding between Coke and Pepsi. And I shouldn't say that, I don't really drink much of it. I think I had one Coke the other night, first time I've had one in 2 months. Well, then, come on, let's not forget them founding fathers. They couldn't live up to their constitutional ideals. You put these bastards up on a pedestal and think they was the know-all, cure-all, do-all. They would have saved this country. Hey, come on. Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. But he also tried to implement a gradual emancipation for all slaves. It is a contradiction. Jefferson, like all the founding fathers, was living in the midst of a revolutionary age filled with contradictions and conflict. The fact that they were able to sort through much of this crap and form a nation that at least aspired towards equal rights and independence is, frankly, nothing short of a miracle. And the father of our country, the cat on the dollar bill, George, the guy with the wooden teeth, he made mistakes, and so did Adams, both John and Sam. In the context of the era in which they lived, they still did extraordinarily well, and this world is immensely better off because of their contributions. But we have forgotten what they were. Liberty, my friends, is most threatened in moments of great duress. This government has done all they can to keep us living under duress for this last 9+ years or longer. But I guess to some degree I'm using 9/11 as the basis. Because regurgitating from the mouth of 9/11 was Patriot Acts 1 and 2, Homeland Security, and the likes of the current resident of the White House. Desperation breeds reckless abandon in such an atmosphere as suffocating to wisdom. Each point of balance in the struggle for freedom requires considerable focus, and that focus can be twisted. It can be flipped and wrenched by the shock of disaster. The preservation or the destruction of constitutional rights depends greatly on our ability to maintain a sense of integrity and discipline as a culture, even when all the world seems to crumble around us. Fear makes the insane seem reasonable. Financial collapse or war or civil unrest, all of these calamities can tempt us to silence our dissent, to do things we would not normally do, or to concede that which is precious to us. Even now, that kind of fear has led to many unfortunate compromises. But the good news is there is no freedom taken that cannot be taken back. But keep in mind, they have taken it from us and they are unwilling to let us have those freedoms back. And so the question I pose to you, my friends, before we close this program, and Dan, if you've got the music ready, you can start to kind of bring it up a little bit at a time. The question is, my friends, how much are we willing to endure to see that our ideals survive? How hard are we willing to work? How much of our time, effort and energy are we willing to expend? If the answer is not all of it, then we've already failed. What we have covered so far is the present situation. By no means does it have to continue. When drawing a line in the sand, that line must first be drawn within ourselves. We must promise ourselves that it is here that we will not bend. We will not lose balance. We will not be thrown. For all liberty depends most on this. What I have been privileged to share with you this evening, I've had to edit for brevity. It would have taken me probably an additional 10, 12 minutes to get it all out before you. But I think the basis of it all was shared well here. I have been privileged in my life, privileged specifically in my nearly 16 years on the airwaves, to be able to take the written word of others. Well, upon occasion, I'm able to do my own writing, but it's been many, many months. In this particular case, the writings of Giordano Bruno, the good Italian brother. An amazing piece entitled Constitutional Judo. I'm going to send it out to the All That Jazz list in just a few moments. Share it. Read it. I've been privileged to present it to you tonight, I hope, with all the emotion that Giordano had when he wrote it. We reach the end of our time tonight. Dan, you with me? 30 seconds of... Yeah, I'd start cranking it. I couldn't hear it, so I didn't know. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks much for allowing me to be here. Listen carefully to these words from John Lennon. Maybe it'll make some sense. So the good Lord sees fit to bring us together again. I am Spartacus.